right, back on the Young Turks. Ben Magwitz, Brooke Thomas is here, everybody. Woo! We told you we'd have a lot of hosts for you guys tonight. I love our rotation here. Okay, so a lot to report, and I want to start with some tweets here. First of all, I want to give credit and thanks to Desert713, who gave a lot on YouTube Super Chat. We see you and we appreciate it. And you could also, by the way, do it on our website, tyt.com/yes is a way of donating. tyt.com/join is a way of becoming a member. And just for $4.99, you get all of our 18 progressive shows. You get all our coverage like this. You get every minute of it, all that you can handle in terms of progressive content. For $10, you get even more as an activist level. And by the way, now we're doing tyt.com/sponsor. Which allows you to buy gifts for other people in bulk if you want, 5, 10, 20, 100 if you want. I know that some folks have done some wonderful contributions in the past. This is a great way of doing a contribution. Plus, you get to give Young Turks membership to other people as well and do some, we hope, good in the world and spread a progressive message out. So anyone who does any of those things, we completely appreciate it. A little bit later, we'll check in on our internal competition too, where previously Anna had been crushing us. We'll see if she built her lead or if anyone was caught up to her.
Oh, damn.
If you
tyt.com/Anna.
If you join through that, Anna gets quote unquote credit for it, right? There's John and Hassan and Francis, Jenk, and tonight we started tyt.com/Jimmy as well. So we'll check in on that. Let me check in on the thermometer real quick and then we're gonna go around the races. Here we are. Oh, 34,845. That's excellent. We were trying to get to 35,000 by the end of tonight. I think we might get there. Let's keep it going. You guys are amazing. And by the way, that also went up significantly after the right-wing troll attack on YouTube. By the way, there was also a little bit of an attack on our website earlier today too. We also survived that. It appears the right wing knows who to target in terms of politics. Because we reach a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So thank you guys for all supporting us and share the stream as well on YouTube. That made a giant difference too. I've got so many, I should have done this. Scumborg Steve, which is a hilarious name on Twitter, says Kansas called a crisp back, Kobach goes down. We covered that earlier, but how did I not do it for you guys? Down goes Kobach, down goes Kobach, down goes Kobach. That's a great moment. So
it's like Big Brother.
Yeah, all right. And one comment from the member section here. Kim said, "I find myself watching you guys more and more, so I thought I should join you and be a progressive with my money. Keep up the good work." Thank you, Kim. Love you. Thank you. All right. So Ben, so Florida is not called. It's called now.
Yeah.
Finally called.
Ron DeSantis has won. He's the governor of Florida. It's great. Big win for Donald Trump. We should all feel really good.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's okay. Unquestionably the biggest win of the night for Republicans by far. And yep. it's a huge win. And it is a win that will give Trump not just a talking point, but an actual tangible degree of political power, because it was the candidate he sort of put himself behind the most.
So I wanted to quickly mention something about Florida that I wish I personally hadn't discounted going into this election coverage. You know, Trump's approval rating, of course, fluctuates, but it's historically low. It's always been historically low for the most part. But Florida, for some reason, always maintained its support for Trump. So when DeSantis was campaigning as this pro-Trump candidate, I mean, he knew what he was doing, and he was appealing to Trump's base in Florida. They support him. They like what Trump's doing. So it is what it is.
We cannot deny that there was whatever the reason, whether it was Kavanaugh or something else, the right was motivated. There was huge turnout. Mm-hmm. Normally, if you told me yesterday that the talk of huge turnout would be true, I would have been like, okay, this is going to be a great day. But it is not a great day. It's an okay day, but it is far short of a great day.
Yeah, look, we flipped a lot of seats in the House, and it looks like Democrats will get the House. Some work left to do on the West Coast against some really terrible Republicans like Rohrabacher and Duncan Hunter Jr. But Ted Cruz winning, of course, is terrible. DeSantis winning is terrible. But DeSantis is worse, and I'll tell you why. Not because he's a worse guy than Cruz, although with the monkey comment, there's an argument to be made. It's because Cruz was always supposed to win. Beto made a race out of it. He wound up losing by a little bit, but he at least it was a safe seat, theoretically safe seat for the Republicans. Florida, the Democrats clearly could have won, and Gillum went into today with a 5-point lead in the polls.
Seven in Quinnipiac.
Which means that their base had more energy. Man, that is really bad.
It doesn't only mean that. It also means that people said they were going to vote for Andrew Gillum and didn't.
Mm-hmm. It could mean that as well. Obviously, it could be a combination of those two things.
I mean, I think that's obvious when somebody's up 7 points in a poll and up in most polls and then they lose the election. That's almost certainly one of the things that happened.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, my going theory on when someone outperforms the polls is that they were able to drive out their side better and bring out unlikely voters better. So. And I guess DeSantis and Trump with their anti-immigrant, anti-minority talk, that's super depressing, but it worked. It worked in Florida.
I don't disagree with that. I think that's unquestionably true. It worked in Florida. It worked in a fair number of places, and it will repeat itself in 2020.
This is a repeat.
Right, but it will. But now, like this idea of scaring people, I mean, if you are Dave Bratt and you want to run against Abigail Spangenberger again, you'd like run the same campaign, but this time talk about how she seems to be involved with the Black Panthers, you know? Mm-hmm. And like, oh yeah, great. And then you'll pick up the 2,000 votes you need and you'll win.
Well, they smeared Gillum with Jewish voters at the end, right?
So did they? I don't know.
Yeah, and so their smears work. Breitbart did it. I'll tell you what I was wrong about because I think that we got a lot of things right, and I think that you know we were right about progressives being able to win in the primaries and in blue districts, and that did happen. We were right about a lot of strong progressives winning, and that did happen. And we were right, unfortunately, that the mealy-mouthed corporate Democrats like Joe Donnelly would underperform, and he did. He underperformed terribly. We were very right about that.
Phil Bredesen, too.
Phil Bredesen, yeah, 100%. But the thing I was wrong about is that I thought Trump overplayed the whole fear-mongering race thing. Now, I gave him credit for trying to get his base to show up, and I said that's a better strategy than Democrats who don't excite their base. But I thought that that he was overestimating how racist the country was. And because he was going so over the top with that anti-Latino ad at the end, DeSantis basically calling Gillum a monkey. I mean, I thought, no, Americans are better than that. Turns out I was wrong, and in Florida, they were not better than that. And it appears in Georgia, they were not better than that. So, because, I mean, look, it couldn't have made it any clearer. They said monkey. And I thought you can't win. No way. Maybe you win in like a smaller state that's really reclusive and you know and deeply conservative and deeply red, right? But in Florida, which in my lifetime has been a toss-up, you're going to be that over the top racist with, and you got Latinos, you got minorities in Florida, et cetera, and you're still going to pull it off. But they did. They did. I guess I deeply underestimated the racism that still exists in this country.
Yeah, and I don't know how. Because just even listening to you say that, I'm like, I feel like we don't live in the same country.
Yeah, no.
What do you mean, you and Cenk?
Yeah, that is fascinating. But you're not the only person who says that. But you know, more often the people who don't say that look like me, but like we've been saying this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could here in beautiful liberal LA, I can get followed around in a store or pulled out. Like what?
Yeah.
I think a different way to say it is that because I think Cenk is not surprised to hear that, and I'm certainly not surprised to hear that. You just thought Florida would overcome that. It's like because really what we're talking about is numbers. We're talking about again 35,000 people whose vote you needed to switch, and
right.
Then Andrew Gillum would have won, and then we don't talk about it because in the end this is a zero sum game and there are winners and losers, and it is still what does get me, and maybe it makes me as will surprise you and as much as what Cenk said did is that I didn't think it would work politically as effectively in Florida. I agree. I thought, but I also thought like a 7-point lead and a 5-point lead in two major polls with high ratings were enough. But still, there are places where, and you thought after two terms of Barack Obama that maybe it didn't matter or it didn't apply as much, where people will still say, you know, I'm going to vote for a black candidate, and then they don't do it.
At what point is Florida like officially considered just a red state and no longer, you know, a purple state?
Well, I mean, look, Anna, so that's a fair question because they keep voting for Republicans. Right. On the other hand, it was a 1-point race. It's not like, you know, DeSantis won by 12 or 17, he won by one.
But it's not like it was a 1-point race between two reasonable people who have some different perspectives. I mean, we're talking about someone who is just openly and transparently not just racist, but he supported everything that Trump did. I mean, the thing that shocks me the most, I'm not surprised about the racism in a state like Florida. What I am surprised about is that the last 2 years have been so tumultuous for everyone, right? And you know, when it comes to the economy, when it comes to those tax cuts, when it comes to everything that Trump has done, when it comes to the environment. By the way, Florida approved a ballot measure that would really regulate offshore drilling because they care about the environment, they care about climate change, they see the impact of it, right? But Trump has rolled back all of these environmental protections. DeSantis specifically ran a campaign that focused on how much he loves Trump. He can't, you know, stop himself from filleting Trump. And so, like, the fact that people voted for that, it amazes me, right? Like, it's been tumultuous, and you've voted against your best interest based on how you voted on these ballot initiatives and other things. But anyway,
it hasn't been tumultuous for everybody. It's
really
been tumultuous for us.
Right.
But nobody, actually, you're wrong. Okay.
No.
It has not been tumultuous for me. Like, I'm chilling. Like, JR and I were talking about this off camera. Like, are we affected by this? I'm doing well, right? Like, I have a great job. I'm not worried about my healthcare. I have great employer provided healthcare. Like, if I look at my life and I only think about myself in a super greedy way, I'm doing really well. But for the people who are living in rural parts of Florida, they're not doing well. For the farmers in the middle of the country, soybean farmers, you know, who have been affected by Trump's tariffs, they're not doing well.
But the fact is, I hear you on that. I didn't mean us necessarily specifically, but there is a, you know, he's not that unpopular. I mean, his poll numbers, we have a tendency here, and other progressives do as well, and we find that worst poll number and we quote it. Mm-hmm. But he's like at 44%.
No, he is. He's at 42.
And then he was 44 2 days ago in the Washington Post.
I saw him at 39. I saw him at 44. But overall, he's clearly at 42 in the average of polls, which is to me shockingly high. But we have to keep it in perspective. That is really, really low. That is why this voter turnout thing is the key. 42% is the lowest that a president has gone into a midterm election.
Right, but there is
as long as there's been polling, they should have gotten killed.
Right,
but turning out your base works. That's the conclusion I draw.
Right. Yes. Okay. Also, economy that 70% of people think is working. 70%. The economy is booming. We don't think it's working for everybody. It's not working for everybody. The truth is, it's not working for everybody. But 68%, I think, is the number who think the economy is working. So this is an explosively good economy with record low unemployment and a president who still somehow, given us, imagine how bad he'd be if the economy were terrible, right? The flip side is maybe he is immune to everything. And he will always be at 42, 43, or 44, or 41, or 39, or 45, where he's been.
Yeah, I don't believe that.
But I'm done predicting things about him. We don't know how to cover him, we don't know how to talk about him, and we don't know how to fight him politically.
Yeah, look, you're overstating it. Look, the Democrats flipped the House. And so it would have been great to have Gillum win that victory. Mm-hmm. And it's devastating that he didn't win. And it would have been great for Beto to win. But Kris Kobach lost. Walker's probably going to lose. They've got a lot of losses across the board. Let's not overstate things. So I'm talking about Florida specifically because.
That's what I'm talking
about. Yeah. So in that case, no, Brooke, you're right. We do live on in two different worlds, and it's not just me and you, but it is also me and you. So like earlier in the show, we were covering a story about evangelical voters of different races, and a stat we didn't get to is very telling about this. They asked white evangelical voters, do you think that there is, are you worried about something, I don't have it right in front of me right now, but it was something along the lines of police abuse against minorities in this country. And 71% thought, and again, I don't, not positive that's the exact number because it's not, notes are not in front of me, but right, it's in that ballpark, said, no, no, that's not a real issue, right?
Right.
And they asked African-American evangelical voters, and they're like, 85% of them said, of course it's a real issue. Right. Of course it's a real issue. They're both highly Christian evangelical voters. The only difference is black and white. And from their perspectives, in a sense, they're both right. What do I mean by that? Those white evangelical voters never saw the police abuse. They're not black, so they never experienced it. So they just can't comprehend it. And yes, there's also the issue of, the cops do that abuse to protect us from them.
Also, right. I'm scared of them right. too. So I'm glad right. the cops are protecting us yeah. from the big black monster. Like that's really, I think that's, there's more of that, it is that than
there's it's also that. There's also that. But why do 85% of blacks think that it exists, even among evangelical voters? Well, so because it exists, because right. they lived it, because right. they lived it. They experienced it. They experienced it day to day. So it is hard for me who, I grew up in New Jersey. Yeah, you know, I was born to a Muslim family. I'm agnostic. But people can't really tell what my race is. And I grew up in a really multicultural city where there, at least as far as I could see and that I experienced, there really wasn't almost any racism. Maybe there wasn't, I just didn't see it.
No, there was none.
No, I'm sure there was, yeah. but it really was a very multicultural city and, right. and community and culture. So I can't quite believe, at this late date in the year 2018, I can't quite believe that there's that many voters in Florida that thought, yeah, I'm gonna vote for the guy who called the black candidate a monkey. Mm-hmm. Like, I can't believe that. I can't believe it, but you gotta believe it, it just happened.
But
this happens every day. This is the world that we live in. And I think just as a country, we don't do a good job of listening to black people in all aspects and just really internalizing what's being said. I mean, an open racist got a syndicated TV show on ABC. Another one got one on NBC. And then we have this all over the president.
Who got
says
who
this
got
kind of stuff? I'm talking about Roseanne and then Megyn Kelly. Oh. And then like people are racist everywhere. Like and they get these great opportunities all across the board. People struggle with accepting black people being experts on anti-black racism. Mm-hmm. People just struggle with that in this country.
Yeah.
And it's hard, especially for people who feel like, you know, like they're allies. Like I'm not a part of that. And that when Obama was elected, it was like, wow, this country's really divided. And every black person in America is like, where you been?
I still think.
What's going on? And so even now it's like, even if it was flipped and he won, we should still be having the same conversation that, because it was so close that
right.
half yeah, the people who voted, even if he won by one, right, yeah. like, that's the problem, he should have won by 99.
Exactly.
You right. know what I mean? But that's just not where we live. So I'm not surprised, I'm disappointed because yeah, and it does affect me, it's different. I don't live in Florida, but like to be a black woman in America and different, you know, for me people, it's very clear what race I am, yeah. like when I walk in the room. Mm-hmm. But like yeah. to be a black woman in America and the governor of a major state like that calls us a monkey. Yeah. You know, like that affects your mental health of black people all across the yeah. country. Like it's not something that you can just like sit back and say it doesn't, you know, affect you. And it's so normalized that people who are on your side don't believe it. Like it's really that bad. It's really that bad.
Mm-hmm. We are, I think to what you said, Brooke, that like the trickle down theory post Obama is unquestionably still here. Like the number of people who couldn't bear that, mm-hmm. among them the president of the United States, is why, because that's what he pushed, right? And it wasn't just, it's all brown people, black people, whatever this guy is, people, right? Right? Close enough, you know, olive people, yeah.
That is yeah, so terrible.
Right, whatever. So all of that still worked. And the fact is, Cenk, as you said, we're going to win, the Democrats are going to win 32, 34, 35 seats, something like that, probably at the end of the night. That's what the prediction is in the House. Democrats turned out. So did they. By the way, he's at 44%, so enough of that.
Oh, my goodness.
43.6. And more than the number being 42, and it'll be 41, or tomorrow, by the way, it'll be like 47. It'll get up. This will be a nice little
thing. The point
is,
it's not one.
Right, but whatever it is, even if it hits at 42, it stays at 41. I'm not sure that he's not immune from a real sink. And whether it's 39, 100% of 39 are into it, mm-hmm. right? They're, clearly, they're yeah. into it. As you said, they come out, they respond to what he said. It worked in Florida. It's going to work in Georgia. We had two progressive African-American candidates who would have been dynamic, game-changing influences for states that are, for various different reasons, a little backwards, right? And both of them, unbelievably, with insufficient and ultimately weak and or corrupt candidates running against them, both are going to be defeated.
Also, though, in 2018, just to put it in perspective, when you talk about the two, you know, black candidates, they also would have just been the fifth and sixth
right.
black governors in the
right.
in the 50 states. Like, it's not.
Yeah,
it's
that
right.
is amazing. Or it's just
they would have just been the fifth
yeah.
and sixth.
Yeah, that's amazing. So one real last thing here, which is that. Look, I don't. It's not only about race, and I don't want you to take away that impression. Because in the same state, Rick Scott likely to defeat Bill Nelson by a very similar margin, and there was not as much of an issue about race in that particular contest. Okay, so and then those are similar numbers. So it's not like all 50% that or 51% in Florida that voted, they vote are all racist, and they all voted for DeSantis because of that. But he did call the guy a monkey. That should have eliminated him. Yeah. Like, if you're a decent person, that should have been enough to at least get you to go, well, I mean, I like Republicans, so maybe I'll vote for Rick Scott. I mean, that to me is like insane, but I get it. You're a Republican, you're a right winger, you like to punch yourself in the face economically. I got it, right? So you vote for Rick Scott, but you said, yeah, I'm okay with him calling black people monkeys. All right, I want that guy to be my leader.
That is racist, and I know that it's that people struggle with that. Like, because I get it, being called a racist is much more offensive than actually living the life of one.
Right.
But that is racist. Like, the fact that someone in 2018 running to lead an entire state would call a black man a monkey on national television, and if that doesn't just completely disqualify, you have to block out everything else. If you can't do that and you don't want to do, I mean, I don't struggle with calling you racist, because I think that it's not the only thing. I bet if we study just one person who just swears to you that's just like, no, I forgave him for that, but there's this and this and this, that there are 1,000 other examples of racism in their life. That I just don't believe that you get to pick and choose like when racism bothers you or not.
Yeah.
And not be racist.
We have a guest that we have to get to in just a second, but I just want to kind of buttress your point very quickly. And this doesn't have to do with race, but I do remember back in 2011 or 2012, there was a Republican who was taking part in these debates about reproductive rights. Of course, he's anti-abortion. And he said something about how he supports forcing women to carry a fetus to term, even if they've been raped, because he believes in most cases, if a woman's been raped, her body has a way of shutting that whole thing down.
Oh, yeah, that was Todd Aiken. That's why Claire McCaskill won last time.
So the reason why I bring that up is because it shows you just how much things have devolved since then. Because back then, a statement like that would really hurt you as a politician. Today, it wouldn't even make a headline. I mean, no one would even care.
I don't know if I'd go that far. But remember, 51% of the population is women, and only 12% of the population is black.
We just confirmed someone who was possibly an attempted rapist into the Supreme Court.
No, I hear you. It might have gotten worse. So, all right, we got more races and more updates for you. But before we go, Rick Scott, is that called?
No, I haven't seen it called yet.
So Rick Scott's still not called. So that race is actually a little bit tighter.
And I haven't seen, finally DeSantis was called there. But Gillum conceded. I was waiting for the AP to call it.
Yeah, it's called. So. All right, let's go to Allison Hartson real quick. Allison is now leading the TYT Army, our volunteers, and she's in the great state of Hawaii. So Allison, welcome back to the program and welcome back to the Young Turks.
Hey, Cenk, how you doing?
Great, hey. Looks like you got a watch party there. Looks like you got a watch party on the stairs.
We're trying to squeeze everybody, as many people in as possible. But yeah, we have a watch party here in Honolulu. And they've also been doing a fantastic job helping to send results to TYT. Everybody's working here and drinking on the job.
Well, tonight's a good night for it.
You guys are doing a fantastic job, by the way.
Thank you.
For, Thanks for holding down the fort for all night.
So tyt.com/army to join up and become one of our volunteers. Earlier in the night, we had a fun Trump supporter troll attack online where they tried to downvote our YouTube video.
Give them to me.
Get some. And our army beat that back, and the likes and the shares that they created actually wound up getting us to a bigger audience, not a smaller audience. So that's wonderfully done. So Allison, I wanted to ask you real quick, what's your plans for the army? What do you want to do with them? What's your vision for how we can mobilize our audience to be the Young Turks?
Well, the most important thing is it's simple to just simply go to tyt.com/army, sign up to volunteer. We're going to have a conference call soon to discuss all of the details about how you can help. But it does not matter what your specialty is, whether you like making pictures or whether you're a writer or an editor or you like to stay behind the scenes and enter data. There is a place for every single person to help us fight back against MAGA trolls, to help us fight back against propaganda throughout the media, whether it's social media or whether it's on establishment television. And so we're going to build an army throughout the country to fight this back. And our first goal is to get 10,000 volunteers to help us build the infrastructure. The really exciting thing is that the TYT Army has already existed for, what has it been now, Jenks, like a year or so, and have proven that the concept works. And now what we're going to do is organize the hell out of it. And we're going to make it so that it's a decentralized force throughout the country so that we can quickly identify stories, quickly identify troll farms and go in and neutralize the enemy and then start building responsible media throughout the country and on every platform available.
Ooh, I like the phrase neutralize the enemy.
Yeah, I know, I like that a lot. That's my kind of talk. So look, there's a couple of things here. First of all, we got watch parties all across the country, Washington, Denver, Hawaii, and so many other places. So this one happens to be in Hawaii. I love to see the Wolfpack shirts in the background. Wolf-pack. There you go. Okay. Wolf-pack.com/join to become a member of Wolfpack. I love to see the Young Turks t-shirts. And Allison, there's the MAGA guys and there's the Republicans and the trolls and all that, and that's a lot of battling. Trust me, over the next 2 years, you're also gonna have the establishment Democrats that are gonna come for us. And so they're gonna think that
we already have in a lot of ways, right? Yeah. I mean, we've seen it. I saw it with my race when I ran for US Senate just this last year as a Justice Democrat. Like, you know, we're all seeing it everywhere. And so that's one of the things that we're gonna decide together as the TYT Army is how to prioritize. And if we can do it all at the same time, take on everything that is really preventing us from having responsible media delivered to our living rooms for everybody to be able to critically think and make educated decisions when it comes to voting and deciding on what issues to support. And make sure that the issues that we're fighting for that are in fact popular issues are actually able to be supported by legislators because they're getting the support from the media, because they're getting the pressure from the TYT Army.
So yeah, last thing here, guys, and I want people to understand, if you never heard of the TYT Army before, so it's all about speech, it's all about correcting the lies, it's all about fighting for progressives, but we believe in the truth, and so we're gonna spread facts as opposed to the other guys who spread lies, okay? And I want you to know something about Allison too. So she ran for California Senate, got 100,000 votes in California, by the way, which is amazing, okay? From 0 to 100,000 in a giant state like this, it was a great run. She was a Just Democrat candidate, as she just pointed out. She also was a national director of Wolfpack, that's to get money out of politics, and organized over 30,000 volunteers for Wolfpack, organized over 2,000 volunteers in her campaign for the Senate seat in California. If anyone knows how to organize, it's Allison Hartson. Yeah. So, and the story that always stays with me is one time there was a committee hearing in a state, and one of the lobbyists we were against saw Allison walk into the room, and there was a Wolfpack volunteer right behind them, and they didn't know it, and leaned into the other lobbyist and said, "Oh no, she's here." Okay, so internet, Trump guys, Democratic establishment. Oh no, she's here.
We're coming for you.
All right, Allison Artson, great, great to have you as the general of the Army. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cenk. Appreciate you. And a real quick shout out to the organizers who helped me, because nothing gets done all by myself, right? So Eric and Stacy and Morgan have busted their humps to help put this party together. And Hunter, who's somewhere back there, he allowed us to use his house so that it really is a grassroots progressive movement. So everybody around the country, join us. You can do the same thing right from your own community.
See, that's a great leader, because we all do this together. That's 100% right. We're not the Young Turks, you're all the Young Turks, okay? So if it wasn't for Hunter and if it wasn't for all of you guys, this show wouldn't even exist, and that army wouldn't exist. So let's all do it together. Thank you, Allison.
And wherever you go, you can go to Hawaii and you can go to Hunter's house. You won that. That's the kind of guy Hunter is.
Yeah, you know, yeah. We like to say we're coming to your house. But Hunter, in your case, we might actually come to your house. All right, awesome. Okay, let's keep it going. Speaking of McCaskill, we never checked in on Missouri.
Getting pounded.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Down
what is
nine
it?
Points. She's mm-hmm. down 8 points, 53.3 to 43.5.
Well, what percentage reporting?
72.
Oh, she's done. She's there done. Goes McCaskill.
Well, as we know, you know, it'll close up, you know, as we saw it in when she won, right? But she didn't beat Aiken. Aiken, she beat.
She beat Aiken, yeah.
She did?
Yeah, I'm positive. Yeah.
But the first year that she won, when she beat the. She beat the other guy. She beat the guy with the dark hair. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, I know that guy.
I don't have to be any more
clear than that. Yeah, Mr. Dark Hair McDark Hair.
His dad had been in politics.
Dark Hair McDark Hair.
Yeah, Darky
McDark Hair. Exactly what you're talking about. Now that you said it that way.
Yeah, right.
Hello.
I'm pretty sure it was John. Anyway, she beat that guy because she closed the same year that Jim Webb closed out against George Allen. It's mm-hmm. funny. You can say Makaka in 2006. That cost you. Right.
Yeah.
But Monkey in 2018, it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. God, it's yeah. It's gotten worse. You guys are absolutely right. Because look, if you guys don't remember that, George Allen was a fairly popular Republican senator in Virginia and was going to run for president. And he was going to win his Virginia race easy and then run for president. And somebody caught him on camera saying
a Webb campaign staffer went around with the camera.
Yeah, it's called bird dogging. He bird dogged him and caught him saying Makaka. Now Makaka is a racial insult. It's an old school one, but not many people know it.
Right.
And so, but it was enough that people were like, "Whoa, I can't believe you said."
It had been in his family. Like it was the old school. It was how they did it. It was how the Allens roll.
It was how the Allens were racist back then. And so that was real. It was real racism, and it was left over as a heritage from his family, unfortunately. But it was enough to sink his Senate candidacy. I mean, he was already incumbent there. It ended his career. Now people are going around calling black people monkeys and winning. So, and that was in 06. That was in 86 or 96. I think it was 06.
That was definitely 06.
Yeah, 06. Now, a dozen years later, and the country's devolved. Yeah. You know, so it is, that part is super depressing. It's true.
Is it weird that I don't feel like the division and the racism changed? But there's this aspect of like shaming that you had to be ashamed of your racism. So you kept mm-hmm. it in quiet. You kept it in private. You did things behind closed doors, or you did things in public, but you didn't say it. Like you didn't come out on TV and say that. But now it's back to when it used to be okay to say things like this on TV. But even more than that, you have really smart people helping you explain it away. Mm-hmm. Oh no, don't monkey it up is a phrase that this and that. Like, do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
It's
no. And so I'll tell you, it's two more things that I get out of it. One is that. No, I'm going even stronger now, and because it is racism, and I don't care how much you cry. I just don't care. So before I kind of cared a little bit, I guess before, because I thought like racism is a heavy word, and hey, you know, be careful, make sure that but if you're brazenly racist, then I'll brazenly call you racist.
Why do they get so hurt over getting called racist?
No, it's a bad thing.
That's what you are. I don't understand. Like, just own it. That's what you are. You think other races are less than you, right? So, like, and more importantly, you support people in positions of power who will specifically go after people of color. And treat them as second class citizens. You're racist. Just own it.
I think there's a significant difference. It's not a substantive difference. It's a difference that we have to deal with. George Allen in 2006 referred, called a specific person a macaca. Like he said, don't, you know, something about that macaca, something like, but it was, whereas what Ron DeSantis said here was he didn't call Andrew Gillum a monkey.
Yes, he did.
No, no, hold on, no, but I mean, this is, he said, don't monkey around. No, but I.
Don't monkey this up. That's
so,
what he said.
And what that does, that subtle difference is, it still causes enormous, I know, Brooke, I'm agreeing with you, but it causes consternation for the press. We don't know how to deal with that. That was a slow roll to criticize him for that because he hid behind the manner in which he approached the language.
We got to stop doing that.
Yes,
I got you.
Yes,
we got to stop doing that. No. What is that old Martin Luther King quote about, like, the moderate liberal or whatever? You know what I'm talking about? You guys know what I'm talking about. You know that quote? But like that, we got to stop doing that. And that, like, leads to what she just said. Like, it's like, why don't you want to be called racist? Because great people help you explain it away. There is absolutely zero difference in what he did and what he did. I'm saying that. That's the truth. Their intentions behind it were the same.
Right. That's right.
Their understanding of it was the same. There is absolutely no difference. And we do ourselves a disservice when we pretend like there's significance even to that. Well, no, he kind of hit it. He did not hide
it. But you're not just saying this
he is.
You're not just saying this to the purveyors of those thoughts. The New York Times, for example, is struggling mightily with this. They actually, 3 or 4 times in this campaign, sort of, you could feel the sort of painful, there's a great piece in Huffington Post today about this, lurch forward and say racially inflamed language.
Right.
But
that's
all have a very hard time. The mainstream media that's part of what they've struggled with Trump.
Like, who makes up the mainstream media? What does mainstream media look like?
Yeah,
and then that'll give you an answer as to why they have a hard time.
But they also have a hard time because that's part of it too. Everybody
they don't want to be criticized.
But when you I think it's more that.
They don't want to be look.
Because as
soon
as
they say it, here's what conservatives do very, very well. They cry, right?
Yeah.
So if the mainstream media calls it like they actually see it and calls out conservatives for their real behavior, conservatives are gonna cry. They're gonna say, oh, it's the liberal media, it's the liberal media. And then journalists get scared because they have had what's been drilled in their head over and over again. So you have to be objective. You have to be objective. You're gonna lose your credibility. You're gonna lose your credibility. They need to get over that because the whole point of being a journalist is to be a truth teller. It's not to go around accusing people who aren't racist of being racist, but you should accuse people who are racist of being racist. And more importantly, another issue that I keep seeing is like this fear of calling Trump a liar, right?
Exactly. Oh, I was just thinking that. I was just saying
falsehoods, misleading. No, he's lying. And I get it. When someone lies, they have the intent. Like the intent is to mislead and to lie to
people. I heard that definition for the first time in my life this year. I did not know.
Yeah.
That there were different versions of a liar. I did not know that you had, like, what?
Oh, yeah.
If I have never seen every type of grass out there, I can sit here and say grass is purple. And you can't call me a liar because possibly I didn't know.
Because they don't know what your intentions are. And it drives me nuts.
Weird.
No, I know what Trump's intentions are. It's the lie.
Exactly.
I mean, if you can't figure that out, you're not a reporter.
But also,
wait, look, this is really important. Yeah. Stop. Go get another profession. If you can't tell that Trump's intent is to lie when he brazenly lies nonstop, makes up facts all the time. I mean, I'll give you a mild example, but I'll give you 1,000 examples. Literally, Washington Post tracked 8.5 misleading statements per day by Donald Trump. He said, this is a record economy. Obama did nothing. It was all because of me, and it's all record numbers. Obama never had a quarterly GDP growth like I did. Well, it's just not true. Obama had, he said, Obama was never in the fours. He was in the fours, he was in the fives. He got 5.2 in one quarter. The stock market went up tremendously under Obama. It went up a little bit under Trump. We're not telling you not to tell the things that are true on their side. We're just telling you stop it with the goddamn neutrality. So, oh my God, but what if the conservatives cry? So what?
Yeah, but
so what?
Right,
like so what? So are you a reporter or are you not a reporter? So look, in the case of DeSantis' comment, when he said, are the voters going to monkey up this election the day after he won the primary and so did Gillum. Now, if you're a reporter, you know why he said that. There is no phrase monkeying up something. That he forced the word monkey into that sentence just to, on purpose to say monkey about Gillum. Now, if you're Neutral, you'll say, well, I can't prove it without a shadow of a doubt because I'm not inside his head and the conservatives are gonna cry, so I'll hide behind, I don't know, I can't tell. But if you're a real person, you know it, and every reporter knows that he said monkey on purpose, he forced it into that sentence because he wanted to excite his racist base. By the way, it worked, but when you didn't unequivocally call him a racist and that it was a racist thing to say on purpose for a political reason, you didn't do your job, so you should go get another job where you could be neutral all day long.
Well, I have more sympathy for reporters. I was one for a very long time. I was trained in it, and I know that that would have been my instinct too. I know it. I know it. I would have thought, well, that sounds racist, and I know who he is, mm-hmm. and I know what campaign he's probably about to run, but I can't prove it. And so what you would do is you would go, you'd go and you'd ask, you'd go to his people, you'd think you were being tough, mm-hmm. and you'd go to his people, you'd go, that sounded racial at a minimum and racist at an at somewhere between highly racial and outwardly racist.
I could say everything that you just said, like that whole, like, I've been a reporter, mm-hmm. I'm trained as a reporter, but then that's where we would split, because I wouldn't mm-hmm. think that. Do you know what I mean?
But I
would be forced to go and ask it just right. like you said it because right. of like
I'm saying
my
that
boss,
it's institutional.
Like, absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
Both of us would have been forced to do it even though we would have known. I had a problem being incredibly tough, you know, so I wasn't really good at it. I'd be much better at it now, but I wouldn't have then. And so, you know, and then the Washington Post comes out and eventually charts Trump's lies, and they have, mm-hmm. and that actually ends up, I think, serving Trump's purpose, because that allowed the rest of the reporters there to not cover the lie as mm-hmm. part of their story, mm-hmm. and you just put it, well, give this to the lie team, and the lie team will run it in the lie story.
Because
it's in our bones to be, truth is the goal,
yes.
always. It should never, but you're supposed to be impartial as you seek the truth.
There's this fear of losing credibility.
That's right, and losing, so
but,
we,
but,
let, let
so,
me just real quick,
ahead,
let me just get that out. But I, so it is a ground up transformation that the press has, many reporters doing incredible work during the Trump administration, but they have yet to figure out how this guy and his acolytes like Ron DeSantis are supposed to be covered. They have yet to figure it out. And it may be that as they figure it out and do what you want and call him a liar, yeah, that it might not even work at first, because there will be, of course, the conservatives will get, they'll go ballistic and they'll be motivated and they'll scream about it, but some way we need to figure out the appropriate manner to cover this guy who is a politician like we have never seen in America.
So I mostly agree with you. Sorry to interrupt you, but I got to get this out. Like, so because there's the way that they react to the right wing when they lie or when they're racist. They treat those individuals with kid gloves because they know that those are the people who are gonna fight back against the media. Now, while they're treating them with kid gloves, you have someone like Trump who's constantly punching the media in the face, calling them the enemy of the state. He's not easy on them. He accuses them of all sorts of things that they don't even do, right? And at the same time, the media won't call it like they actually see it. But when it comes to the left, it's a very different type of treatment. And I'll give you a specific example. And this, I guess this is something that's been like festering internally for a while, and because it infuriated me when I listened to it. So there's this local show called Left, Right, and Center that I actually love. It's on KCRW, local radio station. During the Kavanaugh hearings, they had a Washington Post journalist come on to represent the left, to talk about Kavanaugh.
It's not the left.
Hold on. She says, I'm a Democrat. I identify as a liberal, but I'm really sick and tired of how liberals are trying to pretend like they think that Kavanaugh is an attempted rapist. You don't like Kavanaugh because he's conservative, so why don't you just admit that you don't like him because he's conservative? I lost my mind. I lost my mind because A, that was a complete misrepresentation of progressives, of the left, of why we had an issue with Kavanaugh. Why did we not make the same accusations against Gorsuch? Right? There were real concerns that this guy, first of all, lied over and over again during his hearings, but more importantly, these accusations against him were credible. But she goes on there as the so-called liberal, right? And she attacks the left wing you know, incessantly, aggressively, and there was no fear of backlash, and there wasn't any backlash toward her. Because guess what? Liberals don't cry. Liberals don't turn, you know, a molehill into a mountain. And that's the thing that drives me crazy. I don't know, maybe we should. Maybe we should turn into an outrage machine like the conservatives are.
So look, it's an extreme example, but I'm doing it on purpose because not to say, hey, Trump's about to put 13 million people in concentration camps, but because it is instructive, and it's a conversation we had earlier. So because I asked, and Ben actually had the answer on the show the other day, would they have called Hitler anti-Semitic? Or would they have said early on, not after the gas chambers, that's easy, right?
Like
I hope it's easy. Right,
no.
Yeah. Would they have called Hitler anti-Semitic in 1933, 1934? He clearly said it, right? But hey, there's good Germans in the country, and we don't want to offend the Germans, and there's right wingers, and we don't want to offend the right wingers. I think it was you, Ben, and you looked it up, and you found
it was 1922, actually, but it was a New York Times piece in 1922.
And, yeah, so okay, to be fair to the New York Times, that's much earlier. But you know, Hitler's intentions were very, very clear. He wrote a whole book about it, etc. And they equivocated.
They did.
They equivocated.
No.
And so
he's just using this to appeal to his base to sort of seek at political power.
I mean, in 1996, the answer to your question is all caps yes. In 2018, it's not everyone, and it's too many. It would be embarrassing.
You know.
Yeah, and look, I'm going to lay a little bit of blame on the Democratic establishment too, and why? Because they misuse it, and they use it for political purposes from time to time, and then it takes away from the extreme power that it should have, right? So like they will sometimes they'll accuse Bernie Sanders of it. And are you mental? He chained himself to an African American woman during the civil rights era. That was 40, 50 years ago. He didn't do it for a ploy. He didn't do it for politics. He was a young student. He desperately wanted African Americans in this country.
He was plotting.
Yeah,
he knew 2016 was coming.
And he said, if you're going to arrest her, you're going to arrest me with her, right? And he did that because he cared about the civil rights movement. So when you misuse it, it loses its power, okay? Mm-hmm. And so don't do that. Don't do that. When someone says, I mean, when you put like that person and DeSantis in the same sentence, you've done a great injustice to the cause, to the effort, and to the effort of not just African Americans and civil rights in this country, but the effort of getting at the truth. And so it's really, really frustrating. And so look, I understand what Ben is saying, man. We all got trained in the same way, and we all had bosses at some point that said, don't. Don't call it like it is, reel it back in, say maybe, say equivocation. Well, Goebbels says he hates all the Jews, but does he really? I don't know. He's got a lot of defenders, et cetera.
Right, that's what they say. They say, I don't know. They don't say, don't call it what it is. They, in their minds,
are exactly
like,
right.
I mean, because that we got it.
And they've done this successfully with a propagandistic mouthpiece in Fox News, which has changed the playing field. Which has totally changed the playing field. Let me give you another. I heard this today. I listen to POTUS Radio a lot, Sirius 124, the press room with Julia Mason.
You love Julia Mason.
I like her voice. I do like her voice.
She does have a good voice, but you talk about her all the time.
Well, I listen. I'm in the car a lot during the day.
Yeah.
I'm actually liking her less and less and less. So I'm listening today, and she is telling stories of voter intimidation that they are hearing, including one woman who saw her vote returned, her early ballot in Georgia as null, and then they said her signature didn't match, and the signature not matching is just it's a guy. Like going, I don't think so, right? And there were three or four stories of voter intimidation. And each time, and they had a reporter on, it was the cyber reporter from McClatchy, and we love McClatchy. And this guy knew, like, he was like, we're not talking about the Russians, but we don't know. If they hacked it, you probably wouldn't even know, just to be clear. You know, he goes there. But so he was sharing all this very interesting information. And every time there was a story about some little old lady whose vote might not get counted, Julie Mason would go,
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And then the guy said, and then there's another story, she said, of that there was a group of, I guess, Democrats, liberals, who had told hunters, I think in Wisconsin, that if they registered to vote in Wisconsin, they would lose their hunting privileges in other states. Something like that. Some false information, right? And instantly, I could smell it coming, and instantly both of them said, yeah, there's a lot of this going on both sides.
Oh.
Right? I mean, they found Like, we tried to, some idiot Democrat tried to get 9 hunters in Wisconsin to not register to vote. That is the only case in the history of the United States that white people have been attempted to keep them from voting. There are literally hundreds of cases and an organized effort in North Dakota and Georgia, yeah, and what started in Kansas and spread to Wisconsin to disenfranchise voters. But it happens on both sides, guys. Really.
Listen,
and,
Ben.
And no one ever for a second would think, I'm afraid of what Cenk Uygur is going to say about this. I'm afraid of what Rachel Maddow is going to say about this. I'm afraid of what Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders is going to say about that. Nothing, nothing. But God forbid Sean Hannity brings it up, and that terrifies people.
Well, I think that you need to stop listening to shows that equivocate like that. Yeah. You can become a member of TYT by going to tyt.com/Anna. That's
Anna?
One N.
One N.
Right. And
no, down.
But honestly, I've stopped. I used to love satellite radio, but I've stopped doing that. I only listen to podcasts now. And I listen to podcasts, honestly, from both sides. I like to listen to conservative shows just to get a sense of what they're thinking. Maybe someone's making a point that I've missed or something. But I love listening to podcasts on this network. John Iadarola's show, you know, we compete with each other or whatever. I love him. His Damage Report show is fantastic. No Filter's also really good.
Yeah.
You know,
but guys, okay, last thing. Seriously, though, but like, here's what's useless: neutrality, right? So listening to a conservative point of view is interesting, right?
Yeah.
Listening to a progressive point of view from us is interesting. Real great investigative, objective, truth-telling reporting, watchdog reporting is great and really interesting. Neutrality, they say this and they say that. The other guys say the other thing, but I don't know what the reality is. Useless, totally useless. So if you don't know what the reality is, get another job. Okay, if your job is to say he said this and she said that, that you're not doing truth-telling. So just go get another job.
You want to report on both sides because the Democrats think that the top tax rate should be 37% and conservatives think it should be 31% because it'll create more growth. That's a both sides argument, right? Mm-hmm. There's probably a number there and they might have to work it out. But those days are gone and one side has started telling deliberate lies while attempting to disenfranchise people, right? That is not a time for... Well, I don't know, let's just try and dig at the truth and we'll see. These guys say this and these guys say this and I don't want them to yell at me and accuse me of being a liberal.
All right, guys, we gotta take a break. I gotta tell you real quick though, I wanna, as always, thank our sponsor, Aspiration, here. I mean, they're not equivocating. Well, that's why they're our sponsor, because they're not like, oh, well, hey, we don't wanna offend anyone. They're like, no, we're a progressive financial institution. And that's how we roll. And we're not going to put your money in fossil fuel. We're not going to put it in gun companies. We're not going to put it in private prisons. We're just not going to do it. And if you want to pay no fees, then we'll give you no fees. I mean, it's really, it's amazing how progressive they are. They give away 10% to charity and they make sure that your money, you have peace of mind with it, that you've done the right thing with it and gives you the best return. So aspiration.com/TYT. Aspiration.com/TYT. Make sure that you check them out. If you're going to put money anywhere and deposit it, it's as good an option as you're gonna find, okay? And Anna is right, we are home of progressives. TYT.com/Cenk is the way to sign up. Okay, all right. When we come back, we actually have a ton of races to report to you guys. We're gonna go around and we gotta update you on so many of the progressives and there's some fascinating twists. I don't know if you were paying attention at the bottom here, but there's some strange results that I wanna talk to you about. Right when we come back. Come right back.